Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, these aren't your father's factory jobs. Celebrating the opportunities of blue-collar work in the 21st century on National Manufacturing Day. Also this morning, Hancock County Veterans Service Office Director Nicole Coleman on the long-awaited grand opening of Findlay's new VA clinic this week. In our high school football preview, after another big win against Springfield last week, the Trojans face their toughest test yet at Anthony Wayne tonight. And a special collection of family favorite recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, October 4th, 2024. Could see the Northern Lights late tonight. So that's pretty cool. Another, if you missed it earlier this year when the Northern Lights that were visible in Northwest Ohio, it appears that maybe late tonight we'll have another chance for that after the football game. So go out and get something to eat after the football games and then stay up and watch the Northern Lights. Should be a good way to start off your weekend. So I don't know. So my wife was baking cookies earlier this week, and I walked into the kitchen, and she's got Christmas music playing on her smart speaker in the kitchen. She got Christmas music playing, and she said, "Well, it just relaxes me and puts me in a good mood." She was baking cookies and all of that. Okay, fine, but it is too soon. Do you know somebody who has broken out the Christmas tunes already? Well, here's how I know that it is absolutely too soon. Even Mariah Carey says it is too early to start celebrating the holiday season. The self-proclaimed Queen of Christmas posted a video on social media showing her lounging. She's lounging in a private jet when the song "All I Want for Christmas" starts playing in the background. The pilot then gets on the loudspeaker and says that they are headed to the North Pole, and Ms. Carey shouts back, "Not yet," says she will not be rushed. So you know it's too early when even the Queen of Christmas says, "Not yet." Right. Although, that being said, it is not too early to start thinking about the holiday season if you are hoping to score a good deal on a flight for your Thanksgiving or Christmas trip. Travel and Leisure says that the clock is already seriously ticking here. You should book your Turkey Day travel no later than October 14th, which is 10 days away. And after that, they say prices will go up 5 to 10% every day between October 15th and Thanksgiving. As for Christmas, you've got a little bit longer. The best prices will be up for grabs between mid-October and early November. And then after that, you could see price spikes as large as 32% leading up to Christmas Day. So the good news in all of this is that if you are flexible with your travel plans, if you're able to be flexible, you can score deals of around $200 a seat, even after, you know, those kind of informal deadlines. So you can always find deals if you are willing to be flexible, especially if you are willing to fly on Thanksgiving Day, on Christmas Day, the times when fewer people want to be in the air. They will offer discounts for those. So anyway, that is the deal. Too early to be breaking out the Christmas tunes, but not too early to be booking those flights. As a matter of fact, right now is peak time to be thinking about holiday travel. Some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. This I thought was kind of interesting. Another story regarding the after effects from the hurricane in western North Carolina, where they have experienced devastating, catastrophic, cataclysmic flooding. in parts of western North Carolina. And this is leading, apparently, to a new problem that no one even thought of. Nobody could have imagined this, but they are being inundated now in these flooded areas. They've got enough to deal with, and now they are dealing with swarms of yellow jackets. Swarms of yellow jackets. An entomologist tells NBC News that the heavy rain and floodwaters caused by the hurricane likely destroyed the nests for the yellow jackets. They nest underground and in trees, and the flooding, the saturated ground flooding them out, and the trees, of course, they'd nests would either get blown down or the trees themselves would be blown down. And so now the yellow jackets also have no place to go. And so they are swarming. Health officials in the state say they have brought in large amounts of Benadryl and EpiPens to help those who have been stung and may be allergic. The medications will be distributed through healthcare providers, hospitals, and emergency services. Now that is something that I have never heard of that before. In all of the news coverage of past hurricanes, I've never seen a story about swarms of bees as a result. But I guess it makes sense. I mean, that's... Yeah. What else is going on? Speaking of insects, this is interesting. Scientists now, big news. Scientists announcing they have mapped the entire brain of the fruit fly. The milestone in neurobiological research, they say, could provide insights into brains across the entire animal kingdom. The question I have, of course, is why the fruit fly? I mean, what can we learn about human brains or the brain of any other animal for that matter from the fruit fly? I mean, the brain of a fruit fly is less than 4/100ths of an inch wide, which makes it an incredible accomplishment to map the entire brain of something that small. But I'm not a scientist, so I don't know. I'm sure a scientist could explain it to me why this is important for the understanding of brains of all living creatures. But the research is published in the journal Nature shows more than 50 million connections between nearly 140,000 neurons or nerve cells inside the brain of the fruit fly. And again, remember, this is less than 4/100ths of an inch wide. Scientists believe the mapping of the brain of the fruit fly will help them understand better how brains in general are wired and the indicators of healthy brain functions. So my question here is, how do you know that you have mapped the brain of a healthy fruit fly? It's not like they can tell you. It's not. I mean, if you have some sort of neurologically deficient fruit fly, how would you know? What would be the telltale signs of that? But anyway, they say it is a huge scientific breakthrough, and who are we to argue? This is big news. This really is big news. You know how we are fond of quoting the late Paul Harvey, "This day's news of most lasting significance may be this." Vegetable breeders at Oregon State University have developed two new mild habanero peppers. Mild habanero peppers. It has taken 25 years to create the peppers that aren't extremely hot, like habanero peppers are known to be. So these new varieties are called the Natajada and the Mild Thing. Take off on the wild thing. It's the Mild Thing. They are described as having unique fruity and floral fragrances and flavors, but lower heat levels. And even better news, the seeds are expected to be available at farmers markets next year so that home gardeners can grow them. So if you are a pepper fan, but you don't like the extreme heat of the habanero peppers, now you have options. Pretty cool. And lastly here, among the first things that you need to know this morning, a very serious story, actually, and it caught my eye simply because we were talking about this earlier in the week with Hancock County Prosecutor Phil Riegel about the young girl at Donnell Middle School that was charged with a felony for a swatting incident. And we were talking about the challenge of dealing with extremely youthful offenders who commit very, very serious crimes within the criminal justice system. You don't want to ruin the life of a preteen for an impulsive act that they can't fully appreciate the seriousness of, but you have to certainly hold them accountable nonetheless. So we talked about the challenges of dealing with these things within the criminal justice system. Well, here is another case, this from Portage County, which, if you don't know Ohio geography real well, Portage County is northeastern Ohio in the Akron area. A middle school student there is facing charges after he allegedly threatened violence. Witnesses say the student at Field Middle School said during an athletic practice this week that he was going to shoot up the school. And again, in this day and age, that's all it takes. Police were called, and following an investigation, authorities arrested the boy on charges of making terroristic threats. So here again, a middle school student who is charged with a felony. It's really sad. And obviously, I don't know all of the details, and we probably won't know all of the details of this case. But, man, that is tough. And again, we're seeing it more and more and more. And like we mentioned with the prosecutor earlier this week, part of this, although this appears to be something that he just vocalized, it wasn't an online threat or a phoned-in threat or anything, he just happened to say this to somebody who heard it and then reported it. But one of the challenges that we have is the fact that kids tend, especially at that age, tend to be impulsive, and acting on that impulsiveness is as simple as pulling your mobile device out of your pocket. And all of these young kids now have cell phones and access to social media, and so you don't have any kind of cooling off period in the moment. You have that thought and you can act on it immediately without thinking. And so anyway, just another story, another example of how much of a challenge this is in today's environment. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchak. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly to mostly sunny today, a high in the mid-70s, mostly clear tonight, a low around 50. Leaders of local organizations gathered to discuss the serious need for more child care in Findlay and Hancock County. Among those who spoke at the meeting was Kimberly Bash with the Findlay-Hancock County Community Foundation.
Really, I think big picture, this is an economic development and a workforce issue. If we don't address the child care crisis, we're never going to make any strides in the workforce crisis that we have overall. Because too many families can't afford to be working and also pay for child care.
She says more than 1,000 kids are waiting on child care lists, and for every available slot, there are 6 children waiting. Get more of our conversation with Kimberly and others at the meeting and the story on our website. Ohio's record-breaking tornado count continues to rise.
73 tornadoes have been confirmed in the Buckeye State so far this year. In Northeast Ohio, the National Weather Service confirmed a weak EF0 tornado touched down in Kipton in Lorain County on Tuesday, September 24th. Then on Wednesday, the 25th, an EF0 tornado touched down in the area of Laurelville in Southeast Ohio's Hocking County. That one had peak winds of 70 miles per hour.
That's ONN's Kate Burdett. Ohio's previous tornado record for a year was 62, set in 1992. The executive director of the American Red Cross of North Central Ohio, based in Findlay, Todd James, is joining the Red Cross Hurricane Helene relief efforts. James will be serving as the external relations chief, helping coordinate efforts with local, state, and federal partners and helping families affected by flooding with their ongoing recovery needs. Helene is one of the deadliest storms to ever hit the U.S., leaving behind hundreds of miles of catastrophic damage. And the Red Cross has launched a massive response to ensure no one faces this challenging time alone. We have a link on our homepage with details about how you can help out the relief efforts. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
You know, not all that long ago, the Midwest was the manufacturing capital of the world. In fact, if you lived somewhere like Northwest Ohio, chances are good your career choices were either working on the farm or in the factory. Today, of course, the labor market is much more diverse, but manufacturing still provides good-paying opportunities, and today is observed as National Manufacturing Day to celebrate that vibrant industry. Tim Miley is with us this morning. He is head of the Center to Advance Manufacturing, which, of course, is a collaborative partnership at the University of Findlay, Bowling Green State University, and Owens Community College. And Tim, I know for you, every day is Manufacturing Day.
Every day is Manufacturing Day, and I love when I get the chance to talk about it, Chris.
We talk about this being a vibrant industry, but there were certainly some lean times. Think of the Rust Belt years when it seemed that every manufacturer was closing up shop. Never completely went away, of course, but what has been the driving factor in the resurgence of manufacturing in the U.S. in general and in Northwest Ohio in particular?
So over the years, there's been a lot of peaks and valleys. You go back to 08 and 09 with the recession. But if you really look over the past 4 or 5 years since COVID, it was the labor shortage before COVID. People were worried about that. COVID accelerated supply chain issues of people saying, instead of just-in-time logistics, maybe we need just-in-case logistics.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got a lot of turmoil, of course, going around the world right now, which puts in a lot of risk for everything. So the federal government, the state government has said, here's an opportunity to reshore. So there's programs like the Inflation Reduction Act, the CHIPS Act, and I don't care where people stand on the politics of it, some of those programs are great for manufacturing to reshore and get them back here. And that's what we're focusing on every day, to continue to automate the companies we have, upskill the companies we have, so they can continue to be competitive.
Well, and that's really the key, what you mentioned there, because these are not your father's manufacturing jobs.
They are not. They are not. I was down at Buckeye Machine in Forest a few days ago, and the work that they're doing, their customers are Honda and Whirlpool and Advanced Drainage Systems and, you know, a lot of regional companies, but they're designing parts, they're fabricating them, they're using machinists. And this is across the board because of all the reasons I described with the labor shortage and other pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Manufacturers are trying to find ways to do more with less. And that's where we can come in with the assets of higher education. Because as you mentioned about the history of manufacturing in Hancock County, for example, you know, we still have 10,559 people employed in manufacturing in Hancock County. And that's out of just shy of 45,000 people.
Yeah.
So it is still a very important part of our economy.
You know, one of the myths of manufacturing that still persists, again, from generations ago, is that this is a job, not a career. What do you say when you hear people talk about manufacturing as just a dead-end job?
Well, I take a look at people in leadership and manufacturing plants that started entry level. And the reason that it's not a dead-end job is companies are going to continue to invest in their employees and upskill them. And there's programs like Tech Cred in Ohio and incumbent worker training through Jobs and Family Services. Companies want to get a person in who is going to work hard, and then they're going to invest in you. Yeah, you may not be making a ton of money right at the beginning, mm-hmm. but it is a career pathway. And you'll find your niche. They will allow you to understand, do you want to be in assembly? Do you want to be in continuous improvement? Do you like to solve problems? Are you creative? And once you find your niche, they will invest in you and you can absolutely make it a career.
There's also still the myth of manufacturing, that it is dirty and noisy and dangerous, not the environment you really want to work in. And as we said, that may have been true years ago, but this is a different time.
It is a different time, and companies are focusing on quality and safety every single day. So, for example, the University of Findlay All Hazards Training Program, they're out with companies in all 50 states taking a look at their work environment and how to make it safer, how to make it cleaner, because that drives all kinds of other efficiencies within the program. But I can tell you, I don't walk into any plant anymore, and I go through a lot of them and say, wow, they really need to fix this up, because it looks like it's in the 1940s or 50s. And in fact, you know, this continuous improvement is a big thing. We're holding an event next week in Findlay for all the regional manufacturers. And what we're going to do is give them all an opportunity to sit down together in a room and talk to each other. And how are you implementing artificial intelligence? How are you working on robotics or vision systems? Or how are you training? Because the companies all want to learn from each other too. It's very rare that the manufacturers compete for product with each other. And a good example of that is the Glass Innovation Hub that we announced in Northwestern Ohio in July with the governor and lieutenant governor and director Mihalik. We now have Owens Illinois, Owens Corning, First Energy, First Solar and Energy Pilkington all coming together to say, how do we make glass lighter, stronger, more energy efficient? And we're seeing that across all of manufacturing. Let's work together. Let's partner with higher education. Let's research. Let's do material science. And, you know, it's what we need to do, as I said at the beginning of this, to continue to compete.
Is that what is the most exciting to you about the future of the manufacturing industry? I mean, I want to ask, what kind of gets you stoked thinking about where this industry is headed?
You know, I think about every single day that we have industrial engineers and material scientists saying, how do we do this better on a legacy? You know, they're working on legacy equipment that they continue to make improvements on. So I like to solve problems, and economic development like to solve problems. That's what manufacturers are working on every single day. And it's amazing the innovations that they're coming up with. It could be on purchasing, could be on supply chain, but that's what gets me excited, is manufacturing never stops and says, I think we're doing it good enough.
Yeah.
They constantly say, how do we do it better?
Yeah. Of course, the future of any industry is only as bright as its available workforce. Plants will close again if they can't find people to do the work. So what is the key to keeping this industry vibrant and growing?
You got to have an environment that they can continue to reinvest for the plants, because it's a capital intensive. You know, we're blessed in Northwestern Ohio with the logistics. We're blessed with the access to the customers and the supply chain. But in order to keep this going, it comes down to that ability to continue to invest, innovate, and improve. And that can be on operations. It can be on people. But that's, you hear people talk about Kaizen, 5S, Six Sigma. All that means is, how do we do it better? And that's what they look at. And that's what will continue to drive investment, because if you can get a good return on your investment in Northwestern Ohio when you have competitive plants, there's a good chance that that money is going to come back here.
Again, Tim Miley is head of the Center to Advance Manufacturing Partnership of the University of Findlay, BGSU, and Owens Community College for this National Manufacturing Day. Tim, thanks very much for taking the time. We certainly appreciate your insight.
I always appreciate the invite. Thank you, Chris.
So earlier this week, the VA opened officially their much-anticipated and long-awaited clinic in Findlay. We are joined this morning by Hancock County Veterans Service Office Director Nicole Coleman. And Nicole, how exciting is this to finally have the VA clinic open? It seems like we've been talking about it forever. I know it was delayed a little bit, slightly behind schedule, but it's open now, and that's certainly good news.
Well, good morning. Yes, this is a very exciting opportunity for us, for everyone in the listening area, not just those in Hancock County. This is for any veteran who would like to take advantage of this VA clinic. This is a great opportunity to have it right here in our own backyard. And we've had a lot of people reach out to us to sign up who have never used the VA before because it wasn't in our town.
Yeah, it wasn't convenient. And that was one of the things that I wanted to ask you about, because earlier this week, we were speaking with Adam Farina on the program. He is an assistant secretary with the Department of Veterans Affairs. And he was talking about the fact that since the passage of the PACT Act a little over 2 years ago, the VA has onboarded some 750,000 new enrollees in VA healthcare. And it's largely, he credited largely the largest outreach effort of their history. And I'm just wondering if you would concur with that. How much does that have to do with the passage of the PACT Act and this big outreach that the VA has undertaken over the course of the past year or so?
Yeah, the passage of the PACT Act opened up not just disability benefits, but VA healthcare benefits for probably millions of veterans who were not eligible before. And so, you know, I think the number one message that I would want listeners to hear is that if you have applied for the VA healthcare system before and been turned down, or if you've never applied because you didn't think you earned it or deserve it, now is the time to look into that. So by all means, take advantage of the clinic being here in Findlay and reach out either to our office or go to the open house today where you can talk to eligibility specialists.
Would it be fair to say that the success of that outreach and the number of additional veterans that they have brought in under the VA umbrella is one of the reasons why the Findlay VA clinic now exists, that they've got so many more individuals that they are responsible for, that they need additional facilities such as this one in order to handle that influx of patients?
Well, that very well could be. I'm not going to pretend to know why the VA makes the decisions that they make,
yeah. But
that does seem to be a logical reason that, you know, they needed more space and more physicians to be able to treat the influx of patients. And I know that over the last 10 years, there has been a huge increase of veterans from Hancock County who have been signing up for the VA healthcare system, which mm-hmm. Is why Hancock County was one of the areas they looked to increase their presence.
And certainly, I would say that you can take some credit for that as well, for being able to get out there and spread the word and reach out to these veterans who may be eligible and bring them into the fold and make sure that they are taking advantage of the benefits to which they are entitled. But as you mentioned, this is not solely for veterans in Hancock County. This is going to benefit veterans from around the region. So if we've got folks, you know, from Putnam County or, you know, Wood County or Allen County, Seneca County, whatever it might happen to be, who are tuning in this morning, this is available for a broad section of veterans and around the region.
Exactly. Just like the Toledo Clinic, you know, is in Lucas County, but it has been serving veterans from Hancock County and all the other counties you just mentioned for the last several years. And so now this is just a new clinic that can serve that same population.
And may be a little more convenient. Now, again, this is, you are not representative of the Veterans Administration per se. So, you may or may not have all of the information here, but is your understanding that the VA clinic here in Findlay is now fully functional, providing all of the services that they will ultimately provide, or are they still kind of phasing in some of the services that they will be offering?
It's my understanding that they are fully functional as of when they opened.
Okay.
I think it was 2 or 3 days ago. So, yeah it's very exciting. I know that they are already working on putting together a second primary care team because of the number of people who have switched to Findlay. You know, so that's exciting.
That is definitely good news.
We have been told... what we've been told in meetings is that people shouldn't fear that they're going to run out of physicians to treat out of the Findlay Clinic, that as the need grows, they will grow the teams. So I'm not sure that they plan to have more than primary care, blood draw, and mental health services, but we can, they're saying that we can rest assured that they will provide the number of medical professionals that are needed to serve the people who switch to the Findlay Clinic or who are new and sign up for the Findlay Clinic. So that's exciting.
Well, even if all, quote unquote, all they do are the routine things, the blood draws, the mental health services, that is a huge benefit in and of itself, just having those things. Again, primarily, again, look at the mental health services, which are very much in need.
Yeah. So, you know, and I'll say from my personal experience, so I had my my annual appointment with my doctor over the summer, and she gave me a shot that would require a second dosing, and she ordered some labs for me, and she said, but I know that you're switching. So I was at the Toledo Clinic.
Yeah.
She said, I know you're switching to the Findlay Clinic. So if you want to wait until the Findlay Clinic opens to get the second shot and get those blood labs done, that's fine. Just email your new doctor and let him know when you're ready for that. So I emailed my doctor 2 days ago when they opened and said, I'm ready. Here's what I need. So, you know, it's super exciting because now it'll, I can run over there on my lunch break instead of taking a half a day off.
Yeah.
To go to Toledo.
And certainly it sounds as though they are really working hard to make this transition seamless on their end, which is also good. Now, I know that you will have members of your staff at the VA clinic in Findlay today, correct? Tell us more about this.
Yeah, that's correct. So they invited us to be present with them during their open house today. So I think it's from 11 to 3, they will be having an open house. You can come if you have not yet enrolled in the VA healthcare system and you want to, you won't need us to be the middleman today because their eligibility staff will be there enrolling people. They will also have people there offering tours and answering questions, you know, about how does VA healthcare work or, you know, hey, I'm already a patient. Answer this question for me. So they're going to have the best of the best there today, answering questions, giving tours. And so our staff will be there with a booth set up talking about the services we offer. And a new thing that we are rolling out starting today is if you saw the shirts that we were wearing at the fair that say Veterans, We Want You, we are going to start giving out those t-shirts to the Hancock County veterans, and any Hancock County veterans who go to the open house today and meet with our staff can put their name and shirt size and phone number on our list, and we will get those ordered for you, and you can come in and pick up your shirt and meet with the staff in our office later when it's available.
Awesome. So again, the open house today, you can meet with the staff for the VA clinic and also connect with the folks at Hancock County Veterans Service Office. Again, Director Nicole Coleman with us this morning. Definitely big news. It's been a long time coming, and like we said, maybe a little bit later than what we had hoped, but it is here now. It is open, and that is good news for area veterans, to be sure. Nicole, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris.
C 70 degrees kickoff tonight in the football forecast. We'll be in the mid-60s by halftime, low 60s by the end of the game. And who knows, post-game could have a light show, the northern lights visible. The Aurora Borealis may be back, they say. We'll see. It'd be a great way to cap off your Friday evening, right? Remember our high school football preview once again after another big win against Springfield last week. The Trojans will get probably their toughest test of the season to date as they travel to Anthony Wayne tonight. On the Coach's Corner Wednesday evening, our John Marshall spoke with Findlay head coach Stephan Adams.
It wasn't the most pretty game ever to be played, but it was a win over a team that you should beat. So what are the takeaways from that game?
Offensively, I think we played a pretty clean game. Anytime you get a 100-yard rusher, anytime your quarterback goes perfect, 9 for 9, and 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, took care of the football. He ran the ball a little bit as well, too. Clean written all over. We executed the way that we intended to on that side of the ball. Defensively, you know, we let up a big one pretty early. That got over our heads a little bit, but we end up being able to really come back and get stops after that. So was proud of that. Then I thought our special teams played a pretty clean game overall, and I think we've had some good moments with our special teams group over the past season, honestly.
Injuries have been a big part of the storyline for the Trojans this season. Where do you stand after this past game, aside from the 2 season-ending knee injuries that we've already talked about?
Got some guys that are just banged up a little bit, but for the most part, like, it's nothing out of the norm of what, beside the 2 major injuries, nothing out of the norm of what comes with a football season. So
Bumps and bruises, ice.
Yes, put a little dirt on it, call it a day, right? No doubt.
Now, you are on the road again as you get into the grind of the heaviest part of the schedule.
Yeah.
This week you go to White House to meet Anthony Wayne. Generals are 6-0 and have won each game by 22 points or more.
Yeah, I think everything for them starts with their run game on offense. Be able to control a little bit of the clock. I think that's just the way they like playing. They want to be physical with you up front. They want to establish the run. And they want to be able to hit the easy shots that come along with getting you sucked into the run game, right? So we'll have to be able to match our standard of play, but also match them physically as well, too, defensively. And then defensively, they're pretty sound. We understand they're not going to give a lot of big plays up. And if we get opportunities to make those plays, we have to make those plays. And then also be very perfect in a special teams game. So we know it's a margin of error. We've lost our last 2 matchups by a total of 7 points. They're always tight games when we play each other.
Give me your overall impression of the team. You're at 500 for the year. What do you see as the strengths of your team at this point?
Yeah, I still think it starts with our senior class. You know, a lot of guys, with Ryan going out, you know, you still have an Ashton Yeager. You know, you still have a Reese Little. Still have a Campbell Lane, still have, you know, a Baylor Wilkin, who's had a great season thus far, a Brian Guthrie kid program. So I think it goes back to our seniors and wanting to get it right and make sure we're ready to go and we're prepared for, you know, these games that are coming up, right? So I think it's our seniors. It's definitely both of our defensive and offensive lines. We've had to really lean on both of those groups this year to make plays for us and to open up holes on offense and on defense to be able to stop the run and be disruptive there. So I would say that's definitely the strength of our team, and we still got some playmakers who can make plays. So, but we're really leaning heavily on our guys up front right now.
Part of the conversation with Findlay head coach Stephan Adams on the Coach's Corner with John Marshall from earlier this week. Week number 7 of the high school football season, and also about this time of year is when you start to think about potential playoff seedings and matchups. And I know the coaches really hate when we talk about this because it's far too early, but as of right now, the Trojans are in line for possibly a home playoff game in week number 11. They sit 8th in division, in Region 1 and Division 1. So right there on the cusp, it'll be a tough task tonight against a very strong Anthony Wayne team, but you will hear that game right here tonight on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, 95.5 FM. Our coverage begins at 6:10 this evening with tonight in high school football, followed by the Trojans and the Generals from Anthony Wayne. Elsewhere on our family of stations, high school football action in the BVC tonight on 100.5 WKXA and WKXA.com. Macomb travels to Lipsick. That one should be a dandy. And also on 106.3 The Fox and 106.3TheFox.com, Van Wert is at Ottawa Glandorf tonight in WBL action. You can follow all of the area games, updated scores, updated continuous throughout the evening in real time on the WFIN scoreboard page, powered by ScoreStream and presented by Owens Community College. Go to WFIN.com/scoreboard. We also have a link up at our webpage at goodmornings.net.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Our dumb criminal of the day comes from Pennsylvania, where a man was arrested at the Philadelphia International Airport recently after allegedly trying to sneak a stash of methamphetamine into the airport inside an altered shotgun shell. So, this genius had a brilliant plan. TSA checkpoint scanners clued in agents that the suspect may have been hiding something under his clothes. Okay, so this is how this starts. He's going through the security checkpoint. TSA flags him because they think he has something under his clothes. What they discovered was a shotgun shell containing a white powder, which I'm guessing that he put the powder in the shotgun shell thinking that they would think it was gunpowder. But no, they later identified it as methamphetamine. Did no one tell him that you can't take shotgun shells through security either? You can get in just as much trouble for taking shotgun shells through airport security as you can for taking drugs through airport security. So, brilliant plan with one fatal flaw. The man whose identity was withheld in this report has since been arrested. So, just one little thing that he overlooked there. Elsewhere in the broken news, sometimes it's the police officers who are the subject of the broken news. A cop in New York City has been fined, but apparently not fired, for leaving bizarre voicemail messages for a private citizen after that citizen complained about police parking. Apparently, Paul Vogel was the citizen in question, received a number of calls over the span of 10 months. He had complained because, I guess, the cops have been double parking, or, you know, I don't know. I don't know what his complaint was, but this officer did not take the complaint well. Officer Brendan Sullivan admitted to leaving voicemails for Mr. Vogel, pretending to be a former romantic partner. In addition to leaving breathy, seductive messages, he also left some messages where he made sheep noises and dolphin noises and just all kinds of bizarre things. Officer Sullivan has been fined $500 for seeking to discourage a citizen from exercising his constitutional right about government action. He also lost 60 days of leave for his prank phone calls, but he will get to keep his job. That's making dolphin noises? It's just bizarre. All right. Moving on. The broken news. Not all cops do weird things. Big shout out to the sheriff's deputy in Stevens County, Washington. Although this is more a story about the dog that the sheriff's deputy happened to find sitting in the middle of the road than it is about the officer. So the deputy comes across this dog sitting in the middle of the road in a rural area. So naturally he stops to see what that's all about, because he didn't want the dog to get hit. So he tried to coax the dog into his patrol car so he could take it to animal control, Maybe they could track down the owner. But the pup would not get into the patrol car and instead began walking up the road, which is a very lightly traveled rural road. And so the deputy followed the dog up the up an unmarked path off the side of the road. And that's where he discovered an 84-year-old man on the ground calling for help. The dog's owner, turns out, had fallen and injured his leg. And because he's 84 years old, he already had several medical conditions and needed regular medication. He had fallen. I don't know how long he had been there. But the sheriff's office is crediting the dog, a 13-year-old named Gita, for saving her owner's life. The name of the dog was Gita. I think it should be Lassie. Lassie! Billy's in the well! Billy's in the well! Go get help! Yeah. That is awesome. We don't deserve dogs, do we? I mean, honestly, we just don't deserve dogs. It's a terrific story, though. Couple of other items here in the broken news, the odd and unusual side of the headlines. Man in D.C. is celebrating after, turns out he doubled his lottery prize money. Here's the story, and this is actually kind of cute. It has a neat twist. The D.C. lottery says a man identified only as Philip H., because in D.C. you don't have to give your full name if you were a big lottery winner. So this guy is identified only as Philip H. He claimed back in August a $500,000 jackpot in the Lucky for Life drawing. Okay, $500,000. But the kicker was there was also a second winner in the same drawing. But lottery officials said at the time that that winner had not come forward. So they didn't know who it was. Well, it turns out that the second winner was also Philip H., who says he always buys two lottery tickets, so if he's a winner, he can double his prize. And I've often said that that is really a smart strategy. If you are in a drawing where multiple people can win and your prize would be split with all of the other people who have the same lucky numbers, why not buy two and then you would get double the share. You get two shares. And that's apparently what he said he always does. As to why he didn't claim the second prize right away, he said he had misplaced his second ticket. So thank goodness he found it. Yeah. But he has now claimed his second prize. Second winner, same as the first. And finally, in the broken news this morning, this is a great story. Great way to end the week in the broken news. Although I'm not sure how I would feel about it if I were a landlord. Apparently, some Gen Zers are getting rich off of real estate. Young adults getting rich off of real estate. But not in the way you might think. By using Airbnb, these 20-somethings are making money without buying a single property. Instead, they are subletting their rentals. So they will rent a home and then turn around and list it on Airbnb and make money. The trend is called Airbnb arbitrage, and it is possible because the listings on Airbnb do not show who actually owns a property. And the young adults that are doing this says the costs are lower than buying a home. It's a lot easier to do without a huge capital outlay. I just wonder how the landlords feel if and when they discover that they are renting a house to someone who is then subletting it on Airbnb, renting it out as a short-term rental. I don't know, but it's a clever twist. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Mm-mm. Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time. Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. We are almost exactly 1 month away from the presidential election, November 5th, so a month from tomorrow. So this is the silly season for presidential politics, these final 4 weeks before Election Day. And you have to wonder, are we going to see an October surprise? Already there have been some rumblings with the scandal involving the, on the Republican side, with the candidate for, what is it, governor of South Carolina, I think it is, some of the crazy things that he reportedly posted online. And on the Democrats' side, the scandal involving the mayor of New York City, Eric Adams, and the corruption charges that were just announced earlier this week. So there's always something, you know, that they're talking about with politicians. And not surprisingly, according to a new YouGov survey of more than 6,000 Americans, we don't think too highly of politicians in general. When asked about how many of the politicians in the U.S. do you believe are corrupt, that is, they just came right out and asked it. How many politicians in the U.S. do you think are corrupt? They asked more than 6,000 U.S. adults, YouGov did. 36% said most of them. 36% said most are corrupt. 25% said some of them. 19% said half of them. 10% said all of them. And 1% actually said none of them. I want to meet that 1%. I want to meet, who are those people? I think none of them are corrupt. I don't know. And then they followed that up by asking, over the past 25 years, do you think that corruption in politics has increased, decreased, or stayed the same? 49% believe corruption has increased in politics in the past 25 years. 25% believe it has stayed the same. Only 4% say that it has decreased in the past 25 years, and 22% admit that they're not sure. Kind of interesting, but not surprising at all with respect to Americans' feelings about politics and politicians in general. As we mentioned today from Kyra's Kitchen, we have a very special collection of family favorite recipes. My wife, Kyra, has joined us in the studio. And why is it special?
Our son's getting married tomorrow.
Yeah, our youngest son
our baby's getting married.
Getting hitched tomorrow. And so, it is a big weekend for the Oaks family household,
to be sure.
You were saying earlier, you've got like all of these to-do lists all over the house.
I got all kinds on my phone, on the fridge. They're everywhere, in my head.
We're gearing up for a big weekend. And
yes, we are.
As I believe I mentioned earlier, if I haven't, I'll mention it now. There will be no show on Monday, no Good Mornings program on Monday, because we're going to need an extra day to recover from all of this. So. But we thought that in honor of our son Grady's wedding this weekend, that we would feature a collection of some of his favorite childhood recipes when he was just a little tyke.
Oh, my gosh.
These are some of the ones that
Sorry.
And
I have a cough today.
Into
got a frog in my throat.
Even into young adulthood.
Yes. Yeah. So
from these are some of Grady's favorites.
The cookies when he was little, to the
comfort foods.
To the comfort foods when he was older, and then when he was working.
Yeah.
So they're all kind of a combination of Grady Dean.
Okay. So that's the special part of this special collection of family favorite recipes. We'll begin with slow cooker beef and noodles. Who doesn't love good beef and noodle recipe, especially this time of year?
Yes, and this is one of his favorites. So a 3-pound chuck roast, 1.5 teaspoons of dried parsley, 1.5 teaspoons of dried basil, 1 teaspoon of garlic powder, 1 teaspoon of onion powder, salt and pepper to taste, 6 cups of beef broth divided, and 24-ounce bag of Reims frozen egg noodles. Those are his favorite.
Okay.
So mix the parsley, basil, garlic powder, onion powder, salt and pepper in a small bowl. Rub the roast evenly on both sides with the spice mixture. Place the roast in the slow cooker and pour 4 cups of the beef broth around the sides along with the minced garlic. Then cook the roast on low for 8 hours or until it falls apart and it's going to be really tender. You can remove the roast from the crock pot, or you can just shred it right in the crock pot. I just shred it right in the crock pot.
Makes it easy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Add an additional 2 cups of beef broth to the slow cooker and turn it on high. Return the beef to the slow cooker along with the noodles, and then cover and let it cook for another 30 to 40 minutes or until the noodles are tender. I cannot talk today. And most
you've got other things on your mind, I guess. Know.
And most of the broth has soaked up. So, and then you can serve it immediately and allow the noodles to set uncovered for 15, 20 minutes to thicken up slightly before you serve.
Okay.
So
you're going to cook the roast for 8 hours through the day.
Hours.
And then you've got about half hour or so to prep.
45 minutes.
Then at the end.
Yeah, okay. To finish up. So
to go along with the slow cooker beef and noodles, which, by the way, is not just his favorite. I love that one, too.
Yeah, I know. So yummy.
And to go along with that, we have a recipe for copycat Texas Roadhouse rolls.
Yes, and the reason for this one.
Worked at Texas Roadhouse for a number of years.
And
would always bring home the extra rolls. If you ever wonder what happens to all of the extra rolls at quitting time, they come home
with
the families.
Yep. The workers take them home with them. So this is 1 cup whole milk warm, 1 packet of active dry yeast, 1/4 cup of honey, 4 cups of flour, 1 egg at room temperature, 5 tablespoons of melted butter, and 1 teaspoon of salt. So preheat your oven to 350 degrees, combine your warm milk, your yeast, and your honey, and then set that aside and you're letting that yeast rest for about 5 minutes. Then in a stand mixer, using your bread knead hook, add your flour, your egg, and your melted butter. Add your yeast mixture then to that and stir, then salt and continue to stir. And then after knead for 4 minutes in the mixer, and then add a little bit of oil to the bowl and cover and let it rest for about 1 hour in the bowl.
Okay.
Punch down and roll out on a flour surface to about a 1-inch thickness, then cut into squares, cover and let rest for about 2 minutes. They're gonna rise. In a warm place, then place on a greased cookie sheet and bake for 14 to 16 minutes.
There you go.
So this one is actually
really easy
yeast recipe.
Okay. So the copycat Texas Roadhouse rolls.
Yes.
And then for dessert, one of Grady's favorite cookie recipes.
Yes.
For the lemon cream cheese cookies.
Yes. So this is really an easy recipe. So this is one.
I don't know that we've ever actually told him how easy this recipe is.
Oh, yeah. I don't think he didn't. I think, well, I don't know. Because this was a recipe.
This is one of those that years from now, long after we're dead and gone.
Yes.
He's going to, my mom used to make these great lemon cream cheese cookies.
Yes.
Great lemon cookies. Nobody makes them like mom does. And would that he only knew that they were this doggone easy.
Yes. This recipe actually came from a Thanksgiving at Grandma Fuller's house. So this would be...
That would be my maternal Mom. Grandmother.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So we were there for Thanksgiving and Grandma Fuller made these and the boys just fell in love with them.
You got the recipe from her.
So I got the recipe from Grandma Fuller. Right.
There you go.
And we put this in... When Liberty Benton did a cookbook. The boys wanted this recipe in the cookbook. And so I was like, okay.
And they did a school fundraising so we did, cookbook.
Yep,
okay.
Yep. Right. So this you'll find recipe that was in there.
Yeah, if you have
a Liberty Benton
LB cookbook.
Yep, all right. It's in there.
Very good. So
this is 1 13.25-ounce lemon cake mix, 1/4 cup of butter softened, 1 8-ounce block of cream cheese softened, 1 large egg, and 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract. That's all your ingredients.
That's it.
So you're going to cream your butter and your cream cheese, blend in your egg and your vanilla, add your cake mix a little at a time to the cream cheese mixture, cover and let it chill for about 30 minutes in the refrigerator. Preheat your oven then to 350 degrees. Spray your cookie sheet with some cooking spray and spread with kind of spread it out with a paper towel to even it out so it's all over the cookie sheet. And then drop your chilled batter with a soup spoon onto your prepared cookie sheet. Bake 10 to 11 minutes. You're going to see some golden brown spots like on the sides and the top.
Mm-hmm.
Let it cool for a minute or so on the cookie sheet and then transfer to wax paper to completely cool. Store in an airtight container for up to 1 week or freeze and then enjoy.
Mm. Good
so,
stuff.
Yeah, these are really good, and they're really easy.
Very easy.
Yes.
The recipes for the slow cooker beef and noodles, the copycat Texas Roadhouse rolls, and the lemon cream cheese cookies are posted on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page,
yes,
right?
Yes, they are.
At Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook. It's also linked up at our webpage, goodmornings.net. More recipes from Kyra's Kitchen this morning,
yes.
And looking forward to a great weekend.
Yes.
Going to be an awful lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
My wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. A reminder, again, no podcast on Monday, taking an extended weekend. Coming up Tuesday on the program, we get an early preview of this year's Cops and Kids Halloween Parade, plus 1 in 3 low-income adult women and 1 in 4 students have missed work or school during that time of month. We have details on a local campaign to end so-called period poverty. So until Tuesday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. Catch you back here next week.